In an interview with the Wall Street Journal on Thursday, Trump acknowledged that upcoming Mexican presidential elections in July could bog down the talks, but he said the U.S. wouldn't consider leaving NAFTA until after that date. Senior officials close to Trump have reportedly begun framing the risk of leaving NAFTA in terms of possible stock market declines that could undo a boost caused by recent tax cuts. The White House is praising China's efforts to reduce trade with North Korea after a new Chinese government report showed a roughly 80% drop in trade with North Korea in December. While China's official government statistics show a major drop in trade, experts believe a large percentage of trade between China and North Korea remains ongoing on the unregulated black market. And Russian President Vladimir Putin has a new political challenger. He's a member of the country's floundering Communist Party. Pavel Grudinin, a wealthy entrepreneur, is viewed by some as a chance for Russia's communists to inject new life into their party. But ideological purists see him as the embodiment of the bourgeoisie the party has long fought. Although communists ruled the Soviet Union for decades, the party has since failed to attract widespread popular support, though they do remain the second largest official party behind Vladimir Putin's United Russia.
For USA Radio News, I'm Tim Berg.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HuntertonChamberRadio.com. Brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Well, good afternoon. Rainy afternoon, actually. Not as bad as we probably predicted, or some of us predicted. But, of course, 90% chance of showers this afternoon. Really warm. 63 degrees was the high today, which is amazing after what we've been experiencing. But be very careful tonight. It's predicted to go down to about 30 degrees. Obviously, that's freezing. Quite also obviously is the fact that there's a lot of puddles and a lot of rain, and there will be, predictably, there will be a lot of black ice on the roads because that rain, that wet, is going to freeze. And even if it's not slick ice, there will be patches of ice. So please be careful, because there's a 100% prediction of rain tonight. But with that cold, wintry mix, it's going to be very dangerous. And for tomorrow, there's a 60% chance of what they call a wintry mix, snow, rain, and then partly sunny, high of only about 34 degrees. So it's going to be quite a difference in temperature between today and tomorrow. By tomorrow night, partly cloudy, again, very cold, 10 degrees Fahrenheit is the prediction. And into Sunday, should be sunny, high of about 25 degrees. So we're going from a very warm, rainy day today to a very cold night, and tomorrow probably mostly freezing in many areas. We're just above freezing. And then by Sunday, again, it'll be freezing, but should be sunny. By Sunday night, mostly clear, but again, very low, 10 degrees. Mostly sunny on Monday, Martin Luther King Day. High of about 29 degrees on Monday. Just, you know, make sure that you check if you're going out on Monday, because a lot of places will, in fact, be closed for Martin Luther King holiday, that Monday holiday, Martin Luther King Jr. And in fact, the president spoke today and indicated that Monday, the 15th of February, will be a federal holiday. Maybe he thinks that's making up for some of the other things. In any event, I'm Pat Smits, program It's the Law, and there are a few things that I want to talk about today. One, a couple of very topical things. And frankly, I'm one of these people who are really dismayed at what's happened when they're talking about the Dreamers, DACA. When you see these names, DACA, or also called the Dreamers are children who came here at a young age with their parents. Parents were illegal. The children were not born in the United States, so they're also illegal. But most, if not almost all of them, grew up in the United States, although some of them would have been older when they first came here. I believe the age could not be over age 16. But younger than that, they came here, went to school, they have jobs, they've gone to college, and you know, many of them, most of them are living the American dream, and certainly some didn't even know that they were not here legally. And just think about it, if a child is brought to this country or anywhere at 2 or 3 years of age, or even younger, unless their parents tell them that they're not here legally, how would they ever know? It's very rare that anyone needs to use their birth certificates, and frankly, people find ways to get birth certificates for children who are not born here. And I suppose this is a little bit close to my heart because I had our first child was born in Guatemala. Since her father and I are U.S. citizens, she was a U.S. citizen naturally. She did not have to do anything to become a U.S. citizen, even though she didn't live here. She wasn't born here. However, that would have been very different if we had come here and brought her here and we were not citizens, because then she would not have been a citizen. But in any event, she's grown up here her entire life. Can you imagine what it would be like if our daughter, or many of these dreamers, almost all of them, if they are in fact deported? They're going to be deported to countries that they don't know. Many of them don't know the language. You know, we always assume that everyone is from Latin America and that everybody from Latin America still speaks Spanish. Not true. There are many people here from other countries, children who are brought here by their parents from other countries. Now, it definitely was easier for people from other countries to get asylum. And although even that doesn't protect anyone, because now, in addition to the almost 800,000 young people who were brought to the United States as children, there were others who were able to migrate here because of perhaps serious prosecution in their own countries. One of the issues right now, apparently, are the Salvatoreans, who have been here for 27 to 30 years. These people are integrated into the United States. Obviously, jobs, businesses, you know, second and even third generation who have always felt protected. And if you meet anyone, you know, sometimes people think everybody from Latin America, they don't bother to ask where they're from. But for example, there were many people from El Salvador who were granted the right to live in the United States. There were also many from Honduras and actually from Haiti. So that, in fact, I've always been rather outraged that the people coming here from Guatemala, who really were escaping persecution and death, they were not granted asylum. There was an assumption that they were here just for economic benefits. I guess you have to be someone like me who's lived in an Indian community in Guatemala, and I know when we went back and met again people that we lived and worked among and knew how many of their, and usually it was their children, their young, their teenage children, their young adults, who were what they called disappeared. And disappeared meant in Guatemala that they were killed by the military. And they were not rebels. They were not anything. They were the indigenous population who were living mainly in the western highlands of Guatemala. In any event, the very few, small percentage of people in this country really want all of these young adults who came here as children and were raised here, want them deported. But President Trump, all of a sudden, that was the topic that they were discussing when You know, it's hard to say that our president, you know, talked about shithole countries, including the continent of Africa and Haiti. Now there were, you know, people who say false news. I guess he's trying to distance himself from the comments. But I did hear Senator Durbin, who is from Illinois, and yes, he's a Democratic senator, but he was in the room, and he reported on television the hateful, vile, and racist comments that Trump used. And not only did he say these things once, but apparently he said them repeatedly, and in fact, at one point, even talked about chain migration. Now, I didn't hear that comment other than it being reported, but any African-American in this country, the first thing that I'm sure they would think about when you use chain migration, I have no idea why and how, excuse me, Trump used it, the term, but anyone African-American would assume that chain migration was the blacks from Africa who were brought here in chains, and they were hardly migrating to this country. But in any event, the hateful statements are really troubling, and the assumption that people coming here, people who are immigrating to this country, you know, are somehow substandard or second class. It is really troubling. In fact, I think that's troubling always, especially unless you're Native American. All of our ancestors came here at one time or another. Now, granted, there's always been, it's been much easier for Anglo-Saxons to migrate to the United States, but you know, I'm of Irish heritage, and there was certainly the prejudice against the Irish and the Italians. Not only were they considered dumb, but they were Catholic, and there was a lot of prejudice against Catholics. In fact, one of the, as late as 1960, that was one of the things that Kennedy was concerned about when he was running for president, because the question was he going to be loyal to the United States or loyal to the Vatican? And so we probably have somewhat of a difficult time today to believe this, but you know, I think that the early presidents and the early justices in the Supreme Court would maybe not be turning in their graves, but would be shocked to know how many Catholics are now sitting on the United States Supreme Court. Very, a lot of prejudice in this country against Catholics. Now we have more prejudice against, obviously, Muslims. If you look at the Mormons, you know, they went out to Utah, which was not Utah at the time, it was a desert, but they went out to the Great Salt Lake to escape religious persecution. So, you know, it's, you know, we have Salvadorians here now who are escaping serious persecution. And we have a country who was, you know, almost everybody came here as immigrants, ambitious, willing to work hard, willing to leave families. I mean, think about, you know, leaving a family and never expecting to return. I mean, one of the things that when my husband Dave and I were in the Peace Corps in Guatemala, we knew we would be returning after 2 years. You know, people who go abroad in the military service, they know they're going to be returning. These are people who leave family, friends, everything to come to this country, knowing that they may never go back. And I'm not talking about illegal immigrants. I'm talking about immigrants. And so any event, you know, in fact, one of the things that we should also think about, if you're a historian, and I'm married to one, is the number of countries that the United States destabilized. I mean, when you think of Haiti, that was, as I recall, in about 1804, that was the first black freed country. They freed themselves from the French. And, you know, I'm not saying that there have not been a lot of disasters since then, but partly, if you look at the history, some of that was caused by the United States in about 1915. But in any event, there's no place in this country, and I hope everybody agrees, that there's no place in this country for that kind of hatred. And if you know immigrants, I mean, I have one of my clients came here from Africa. He today is an extremely successful physician, surgeon. So you cannot assume that everybody is poor and uneducated. But remember, the poor and uneducated in a generation or two, send their kids to school. And for now, many of them are doing the labor that other people don't want. It's a fallacy to think that immigrants have any detrimental effect on wages, on decent wages. Now, there probably is something to be said about the fact that illegal or undocumented immigrants may somewhat drive down salaries. And often that's because they can't stand up for themselves. They have to take whatever they're given. They can't complain. If someone, and this has happened so many times, even I personally know of a number of times where they've been cheated, working especially for day laborers, working, not getting their salaries, or not getting what they were promised, and there's nothing they can do about it. In any event, I'm done with my rant. I'm going to play a few spots, and then I'm going to talk about impact of the new tax bill and whether or not employees should be considered whether or not they'd be better off being independent contractors. Now, that doesn't mean that everybody can, but that's what I'm going to be back talking about after these brief messages from a few of our sponsors. So please stay tuned.
I'm Andy Ross. I'm chairman of the Ambassadors Committee of the Chamber. As members of the Ambassadors Committee, we contact new and renewing members of the Chamber to get their feedback on their Chamber experience and make them feel more at home with the Chamber.
Hunter Chamber of Commerce, building business, one business at a time.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HuntertonChamberRadio.com, brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
This is Tony Clark, para planner at Patton Heidi & Associates. Americans believe they should be in charge of their own future, how they will live tomorrow. Since 1894, Ameriprise Financial has worked for their clients' futures, helping millions of Americans retire on their terms, when they want, where they want, doing what they want. Today, Patton Heidi & Associates, a financial advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., remains true to the vision of always putting clients first. We are ready to help you put a confident retirement more within reach. Put the strength of a leader in retirement planning to work for you through a personal one-to-one relationship. Patton Heidi & Associates will work with you to develop a plan to help you pursue your retirement goals. Call today at 908-713-6600. Office is located at 1318 Route 31 North, Annandale, New Jersey. Investment advisory products and services are made available through Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., a registered investment advisor, Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., member FINRA and SIPC.
Advancing Hunterdon is an ever-sharp focus on the growth and prosperity of Hunterdon County's businesses. Advancing Hunterdon engages businesses within and throughout the county that are responsive to a call to action as the next chapter in business success. If your business and organization wants to get engaged, contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. Advancing Hunterdon, a roadmap for economic growth for the business community of Hunterdon.
Okay, we're back. Program It's the Law. I'm Pat Smith. I am an attorney here in Hunterdon County. I practice, and my practice is exclusively family law. So I try to not focus on that because I think that there's so many other areas. And one of the things that I plan on doing in the next few weeks is I'd like to get an attorney in who deals with franchise law. And if you know of anyone who's looking into a franchise and might be interested in appearing on the program, please have them call me. I'm Pat Smits, S-M-I-T-S, and my number is 908-236-7530. And I'd like to include either someone who has a franchise and they may be able to tell somebody about the pitfalls and what to look out for, or somebody thinking of going into a franchise business. So what else? Well, I wanted to talk a little bit about the tax law, and I will also have an accountant on talking more in depth about the tax law. And frankly, if you're one of the mega wealthy, you're going to have a great benefit. For the rest of us, especially those of us who live in New Jersey, there can be our taxes are going to go up. Almost everyone's taxes are going to go up in light of the fact that we're no longer going to be able to deduct all our real estate taxes and state income taxes. One thing that I do understand has been deferred, and this is important for anyone going through divorce, and of course for me since I do this kind of work, is that we anticipated that you would have to be divorced by the end of 2017 if, in fact, you reached an agreement where you were paying deductible alimony, meaning the person who is paying alimony to their former spouse gets to deduct it from their taxes, and the person receiving the alimony has to include it. Now, I'm not using husband and wife because, in fact, wives are paying alimony to their husbands. But the point is that shifts so that there's more money between the two families if you pay less taxes. So I understand that that provision has been deferred until December 31st of 2018. So what else was I... as far as taxes, I think that most people would really want to see a fair tax law, and there can be one. It certainly doesn't seem like this is it. But the other thing that someone might want to consider is whether or not they want to become, if they can, an independent contractor. And I thank Cal Barson, who is an accountant with the Barson Group in Somerville, for providing the information that I'm going to talk about at this point. And one of the things that people should look at is the fact that the new tax bill greatly favors income that is received through a pass-through entity. Now, this can be a sole proprietorship, an LLC, an LLP, or even an S corporation. Now, that's contrasted with the same exact income received as an employee. So that means it is worth giving consideration to whether or not you would be better changing from being an employee to being an independent contractor. Now, I'm not saying that everybody can do that, but in fact, there are some people who do that. Real estate agents, for example, are independent contractors. Life insurance agents, perhaps not all of them, but many of them are. Life insurance salespeople are independent contractors. Now, realize the one thing that you have to do as an independent contractor is you have to pay both the employee and the employer's Social Security. So you have to have some other advantages to make it financially worthwhile. But in this case, whether operating as an independent contractor took the form either as a sole proprietor or some form of a pass-through entity. Now, of course, as we know, this is not for everyone, and in many cases, you cannot simply decide to no longer be an employee. And that's where you really need to talk to your accountant, your tax preparer, to see if, in fact, what you do would qualify you as an independent contractor. Because there is much to be said for operating as a business as contrasted with being an employee. And the new tax law creates a favorable situation, taxing only 80% of your income when it's as a pass-through entity, whereas an employee, it's all taxed. So the portion of the Social Security benefits, payments that you're making will be offset by the fact that 100% of your income is not taxed. So obviously, economically, it's absurd that only 80% of your income is taxed when it's as a pass-through entity as compared to when it's from employment as an employee. However, as I said, and as Mr. Burson said, economically this is absurd. However, it's the new reality under the tax law. So some might say that this absurdity is the new norm. If you can use it, you can take advantage of it, why not? Since it is legal. And as we know, we've heard often our president say that he took advantage of all the legal loopholes. And there were many, and there are still many, legal loopholes for the wealthy. In any event, in addition to as far as the taxes, there are additional advantages to being a sole independent contractor. And they include the greater ability to write off expenses against income. So in any business, we have business expenses. And it was interesting because I was in court recently and I was representing a doctor, and the attorney on the other side kept touting my client's income. However, what the attorney was doing was including 100% of his revenue without taking into account all of his legitimate business expenses, i.e. for nurses, for receptionists, for equipment, for rent. So, of course, this attorney was totally exaggerating my client's income. And because, I had to carefully point out what his actual pre-tax income was. And then, of course, after tax is another situation. But as an employee, what you're earning is pre-tax income. And there are, of course, some advantages because there are certain, and I don't know exactly how this is working with the new tax bill, but in the past, there were certain things that were not taxed, such as medical. If you had a medical account, set up a medical account, you could contribute to that medical account and pay medical expenses pre-tax, with pre-tax money instead of after-tax money. So, in other words, as we were saying, there are additional advantages such as greater ability to write off expenses against income, which for the most part is now completely gone to employees. And, of course, there's also the ability to create your own retirement plan. But downside, of course, is that you might lose fringe benefits, such as insurance if you're an employee, or else you may have to buy it elsewhere, and you will likely face increased payroll taxes because you are paying both the employees and the employer's taxes. And also for certain higher earning professionals, the 80% rule doesn't apply. But what does this mean? This means that you should sit down with your accountant or your tax consultant or your other accountant and or whatever tax professional you use, and hopefully you use a tax professional who knows what they're doing and is not just some fly-by-night that's set up right before tax season and right after, and I'm not going to mention names. It's amazing to me, as I see a lot of tax returns, and it's amazing to me how often I catch glaring errors that are made by some of these ill-equipped tax preparers. But this is one, if you think that there is any possibility that you could be an independent contractor, you know, check it out. And, of course, those of us who own our own businesses and, you know, are employed by self-employed, we are, in fact, independent contractors. And I remember years ago, I was a partner in a very large law firm. And one of the things that was always amazing to me is that I would actually have to pay taxes on more money than I drew out of the partnership every year, because we would get K-1s, and frankly, we just couldn't write off many things. So in any event, look into it. I think it's, if it works, you will be able to deduct legitimate business expenses. For example, you know, a realtor gets to deduct automobile expenses. A life insurance salesperson gets to deduct, gets to deduct vehicle expenses used in the job. Also supplies, telephone expenses, all of the other legitimate expenses. Many people do deduct a portion of their home. You know, I used to warn clients to be very careful, and I think you still have to be very careful. However, I think there's more recognition that more and more employees or non-employees are, in fact, working out of their home. To be snide, I would say, except there's no recognition in Clinton Township because it doesn't look to me like they've revamped or even re-looked at their home office regulations in about a zillion years, because the increased number of people who are working out of their home, if not full-time, but part-time, has increased significantly. In fact, I was reading an article recently in the New York Times about people who are actually buying homes on the eastern end of Long Island. Now, you know, I guess I don't remember exactly how many miles that is, but it certainly, would make the commute from this area look like nothing. Probably commute from that end of the island is, you know, 3 or more hours a day one way. So that, that's been done. So people are working from home, and there are, in fact, regulations with respect to use of a home, how many square feet can be used, how many employees someone can have. And I know, you know, Clinton Township is ridiculous, frankly. But I also have a friend who recently was turned down in Reddington. And if you knew where his property is, I was amazed that, in fact, the area where he is still, in fact, zoned residential, because he's very close to Route 22. But in any event, we'll be back after a couple spots from our sponsors and to talk more about the law.
I'm Andy Ross. I'm chairman of the Ambassadors Committee of the Chamber. As members of the Ambassadors Committee, we contact new and renewing members of the Chamber to get their feedback on their Chamber experience and make them feel more at home with the Chamber.
Hunter Chamber of Commerce, building business, one business at a time.
Join us for a fun-filled evening at the Hunterdon County Crime Stoppers annual fundraiser, Thursday, November 16th, 6:30 to 9:30 p.m. at Lone Eagle Brewing, 44 Stangle Road, Flemington. Craft beer tasting, great food, door prizes, live music, and a 50-50 raffle. Tickets are $50 each, and sponsorship advertising
I really don't think that we still need to talk about the Crime Stoppers gala back in November, although Crime Stoppers is really, if you don't know anything about it, find out, because it's a great way that people can anonymously report crimes and be rewarded for it. But Crime Stoppers is a successful organization here in Hunterdon County, supported by the prosecutor's office. By the way, we're very lucky to have Tony Kearns and his staff. I know a number of people who are involved in Crime Stoppers, and I applaud with what they're doing. And we all want to, look out, help, and make sure that crime is at a minimum here in Hunterdon County. In any event, I don't think we can or need to talk anymore about a function that went on in November. And I don't recall when their next function is, but we will certainly announce it here. And think of attending, because they're, they've had dances, and it's a fun group of people, it really is. And there's so many good organizations here in Hunterdon, but that's certainly one of them.
Sabía que de cada cinco personas hay una que lucha con síntomas difíciles de salud mental. NAMI es una organización estatal sin fines de lucro. Somos empleados voluntarios. Somos la voz de la nación sobre las enfermedades mentales. NAMI te ofrece grupos de apoyo, educación e información. Nuestro programa educativo de Familia a Familia está dirigido por miembros de NAMI para familiares y amigos de personas que luchan con dificultad de salud mental. Llámanos al 888-803-3413. Recuerda, no estás solo. NAMI está contigo y no hay salud sin salud mental.
Okay, I'm back. It's Pat Smits, and back to talking about legal issues. And another one that I think most people who have stock, and they know that if, in fact, there's a loss, they can take losses against gains. I know there were some people who were scrambling at the end of last year to see if, in fact, there was anything they wanted to get rid of, that they would have a loss to deal against some of the gains that they were getting. Because, frankly, stock market has been, pretty great. And however, if in fact this past year, when you look at all your stock market transactions, you see that there are $10,000 in gains, great, and $30,000 in losses. Not good, obviously, not good investment there. But from a tax point of view, the $10,000 of gains are offset by the $30,000 of losses. So therefore, you have a net loss of $20,000 in excess of gains for the year. So you don't have to report $10,000 of gains on your tax return. The question is, can you report $20,000 of losses? So the answer is no. But what you can do, because the way the federal tax law works, is you are only able to write off $3,000 per year of such excess capital losses. It's called a carryover loss. And one of the things that we look at in divorce cases is whether or not there's been, when they filed a joint return, whether or not there's been a $3,000 loss, because we want to know what's the total balance of the loss that can be deducted, because, of course, it can only be deducted $3,000 a year. But the capital losses can be used against other income, including you can take it against a salary, interest, dividends, or other stock sales. And you can use it every single year until the carry loss, capital carry loss carryover is done. So in this case, you'd be able to, for 6 years, you'd be able to take your $3,000 loss, and after 6 years, you'd have $18,000, and so then the following year, you'd be able to take two. Guess I need to go back to first grade for math. And as I said, where you might have capital gains in the past, capital loss carryovers were used to offset those subsequent capital gains to the extent there are losses available. Again, however, losses remain unused against are eligible for the $3,000 year against other income. So you can use them for a very long time, obviously, and there's no limit to the number of years to carry it forward other than your lifetime. So if you still have $20,000 of losses that you haven't been able to deduct, when you die, it's gone. Nobody else can take that except your survivor. For joint returns, at least you have the ability to continue to write them off on the life of the survivor of the two until he or she dies. And then, however, there's no such thing as the ability to carry them back, that is to write them off against years prior to when you incurred the loss. However, if you're filing tax returns in New Jersey, you have to understand that New Jersey does not allow any such loss carryovers. So you can't take that $3,000 a year off on your New Jersey tax returns. Tough, but that's the situation. So what else is happening in the news? Well, something's happening close, and that's Six Flags. Their Six Flags Entertainment was sued, and it's a potential class action claim because it failed to comply with the 2003 federal law requiring truncation of credit card numbers on cash register receipts. So, for example, if you look at your cash register receipt from anywhere, not just Six Flags, from anywhere, they can only put on your last four digits of your credit card when you're paying by credit card. So you look at any restaurant tab or anything else, and if you forgot your entire credit card number, you're not going to be able to find it on a receipt. But apparently, Six Flags did not protect patrons' credit card numbers, and so that there is a pending class action suit against them. So what other, I think that's a pretty significant, obviously, to see that that could be, somebody's going to make a lot of money on that case. Probably not the people, unless they could prove, if in fact you could prove that as a result of that, your credit card, your identity was stolen, and someone else used your credit card because they were able to get that number. Because remember, if you're on the phone, you're just asked for the number. Now, the only thing that would be, of course, different is most of the time if you're buying something on the phone or over the internet, they ask for not only the credit card number, but the expiration date and that little 3 or 4 digit number, depending on whether it's a Visa or American Express. And, of course, you wouldn't have that even if you had the full credit card number from Six Flags. Excuse me. Case where Monmouth University, there was a woman who fell and injured herself while attending a music concert at Monmouth University. And according to this New Jersey appellate court ruled that she cannot sue the school for damages. Now, because there was a dissent in the appellate division, usually it's a 2 or 3 judge ruling in the appellate division, and they usually agree. In this case, because they did not agree, it's called a divided decision. So it sets the case up to be heard by the state Supreme Court, and that is pretty significant. So the the case that I'm talking about was Green versus Monmouth University. And in that case, there was summary judgment to protect the university, meaning that the university asked that the case be dismissed, and they asked that it be dismissed based on the grounds of charitable immunity. So what happened here is this woman allegedly fell on unsafe stairs on the campus while attending a music concert. The concert was held pursuant to a contract between the university and Concerts East, Inc., wherein Concerts East, Inc., and wherein Concerts East had exclusive rights to book concerts to be held at the facilities, Monmouth University facilities. And they did that in exchange for a rental fee for use of the facilities and a split of the merchandise commissions. And facility fees added to the ticket price. So if you were going to a concert at Monmouth University, in addition to exchange of a rental fee, which you would not be paying as a consumer, but there would be a facilities fee attached to your ticket, which of course you would pay. And then if in fact you bought any tchotchkes, that the university would get a percentage of that also. So what happened is Concerts, Inc. assigned its rights under the agreement to another management company, Thoroughbred Management, Inc. Thoroughbred Management, Inc., TMI, and the university entered into an event license agreement for the concert that the woman, where she fell. And at that point, the university agreed to handle over-the-counter ticket sales, and the Management, Inc. handling online ticket sales. So one of the questions apparently was where she bought the ticket. She bought her tickets online with her ticket stating that the concert was being held at the, quote, Mac at Monmouth University, end quote, in support of her complaint. So in this case, then, she appealed, or she argued, I guess I should say, an appeal, that she was a business invitee and that defendant breached its duty of care. So the question would have been whether the defendant had a duty of care, which would have been a primary issue. So the trial court granted summary judgment under the Charitable Immunities Act on appeal. And, excuse me, so, you know, the litigant, the plaintiff, conceded defendant Monmouth University was a nonprofit corporation organized exclusively for educational purposes as required by the Act. However, she argued the defendant failed to meet the third prong of the Act because it was not promoting educational objectives and purposes at the time she fell. Nor was the plaintiff a beneficiary of the defendant's educational costs. And then the court So that was the issue. At the time that she fell, she was not going to class. She was not going to an exam. She was participating at the university, but in a concert. So it had nothing to do with the actual reason for the existence of the university. So at the court in this case, the majority of the appellate division affirmed the trial judge who granted summary judgment. And they first said that providing concerts to the public was one of the university's stated purposes. So that was number one. And then number two, the court further noted that a nonprofit corporation could provide educational experiences that were, quote, recreational. Strange, but that's what they said. And the court held that these goals were served by the concert. However, in a dissenting opinion, Judge Fisher, who was one of the three appellate judges, of course, and this was a three-judge panel because they knew that there were going to be some differences here. And he argued that there was a disputed question over whether the concert was being held for an educational purpose. And so that was the real issue. So is a country and western concert, is there an educational purpose? That's the issue. This case, if the plaintiff wants to, can go up automatically, certification will be granted, and the Supreme Court would hear this case. Now, what they could do, of course, is truncate it by just adopting the appellate division opinion without writing an opinion themselves. However, this is significant because at what time do some of these groups, such as an educational or charitable institution, at what point can they not hide behind that shield? And, of course, it would be a shield in that case. Well, I'm actually, there's a case in kind of entertainment and sports law. It was not published, but it's Davidovich versus the Israel Ice Skating Federation. So that this case, again, it was the appellate division, and the In this case, the respondent is a dual citizen of Israel and the United States, and she competed with her partner in the pairs ice skating competition for the appellant. Excuse me. Excuse me. The Israel Ice Skating Federation. And so that was the pairs ice skating competition. And she was a member of the Israeli team in the 2014 Winter Olympics in Sochi, Russia. Following the Olympics, respondent requested the Israel Ice Skating Federation release her from the Israeli team so that she could skate for another country. And they refused her request. Then she instituted the underlying action, seeking mainly to be released from the Israel Ice Skating Federation, as well as various tort claims that she made. So in response, the Israel Ice Skating Federation argued that the New Jersey Supreme Court, the New Jersey Superior Court, the trial court, lacked jurisdictional authority to intercede in this dispute. So that's always a question. Does the court have jurisdiction to deal with the issue? And, of course, they said no. And so what happened? They also, by the way, served a written, what they call, safe harbor notice pursuant to Rule 1:4-8, stating that it regarded her complaint to be frivolous. So that was the other question. Was the complaint frivolous under our laws? And they demanded that she withdraw it. And then after several appeals and administrative rule changes in the skating community, she was ultimately released from control by the Ice Skating Federation. However, thereafter she moved to voluntarily, thereafter they moved to voluntarily dismiss any of her remaining claims on remand. And she accepted dismissal, but then separately argued that they were entitled to counsel fees and other sanctions. So were they entitled to counsel fees and other sanctions? So the trial court granted dismissal, but denied sanctions as because the lawsuit had not been frivolous. And on appeal, the appellate division affirmed holding respondent's lawsuit was neither frivolous nor pursued in bad faith. And the court noted that respondent was legitimately seeking the ability to pursue her competitive skating career. And she wanted to do that internationally with another member country. And the appellate division said she did not deliberately choose to bypass administrative remedies that had yet been clearly established. So this wasn't a situation where somebody went to court, filed something frivolous, the person was required to perhaps go to arbitration, binding arbitration, and so that could be a reason that it would be frivolous. In this case, it was not. And although neither party completely won on all issues, the court was unpersuaded that the litigation was frivolously filed. So that's about the end of what I have today. And we'll be followed up by the news and the sports guys. So please stay tuned.
Hi, I'm Joe Peters. Buying or selling a property can be one of the most expensive undertakings you face in your lifetime.
Hunterdon Medical Center was started by families for families. Inside our circle of care, we offer coordinated care for your entire family, led by our outstanding family medicine physicians and specialists. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care. If you need a physician, call Hunterdon Medical Center's Physician Referral Service at 1-800-511-4-HMC or visit us on the web at www.hunterdonhealthcare.org.